Oh boy, it must be football season because we're welcoming in our good buddy Big Ten Ted. Find him on Twitter and YouTube, same username at Big Ten Ted. Does great content on YouTube, shares that on social media, and great follow if you're a Big Ten football, Big Ten sports fan to get you all up to speed on what's happening in the world of the Big Ten. And well, some big news today in the Big Ten. And a lot of key storylines around the conference as we approach week one. So let's bring in Ted to break it all down for us here. Ted, how you doing, man?
You know, it's crazy, Spencer, that the day that we're coming on for our first appearance of the year, we get news in your neck of the woods, you know, with Kirk Ferentz being suspended. It's almost like they timed it out and planned it out that way. But I'm excited. I'm ready to go. I'm ready for football. I'll be covering that first Minnesota-North Carolina Thursday night game. Excited for that. We got three games kicking off on Thursday night, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Sunday as well. So, and that's now less than 7 days away until those Thursday openers. So I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I had to do a double take. I'm still, I don't want to say I'm learning the new 18-team conference, but I looked at the schedule on ESPN.com today just to figure out, okay, what are we working with for next week, Thursday, Friday, whatever. And you just said it right there, and Sunday, because USC plays on Sunday. And I'm like, wait, well, USC, that's right. They're in the Big Ten now. I promise I won't forget that by maybe week three, but it is the time of year where we're getting things going here. Let's start with the news that everybody here wants to hear about. I want to get your opinion on it. That's why, well, I invited you on the show before everything went crazy, but I want to get your thoughts since we have you on the one game self-imposed suspension for Kirk Ferentz and John Budmeyer, the wide receivers coach. Not a lot said today. There was stuff said, but because it's an ongoing investigation, you can't, and they can't, the University of Iowa specifically can't, you know, comment further on any specifics, but this stemming from the player in question, widely reported to be Cade McNamara, stemming from his recruitment after he entered the portal at Michigan and then eventually ended up at Iowa. And from the sounds of it, this is impermissible contact. John Budmeyer had a previous relationship with Cade from his time at Wisconsin, with Budmeyer's time at Wisconsin. Impermissible contact is the rule of the roost here. So in the grand scheme of things, it's not the biggest deal in the world, but it's still something that the University of Iowa felt they needed to get out in front of, especially considering the timing of this being a week out from the season. I'll just ask you, Ted, what do you make of the whole situation that was put forth today in Iowa City?
Boy, it's interesting to me because Kirk Ferentz, for the better part of a quarter century that he's been in Iowa City since 1999, he's run a football program that's right down the straight and narrow. And now all of a sudden you got this gambling thing that happened last year. You have the Caden Proctor situation, right, this summer where that was something where they self-imposed a violation, right, where, you know, where he kind of came to Iowa and then went back to Alabama and all that. There were some text messages that were exchanged by the recruiting director as well early in that process. And then you have this deal with Cade McNamara. It's kind of crazy. When you think of Iowa, you don't think of a program that's maybe kind of going through all this off-the-field stuff, but yet here we are. You know, Kirk and this Iowa program, best guess at the presser today, obviously trying to get out in front of this thing so the NCAA doesn't breathe down their neck too far, almost the anti-Michigan, right, what happened with their thing last season as well. But like you said, it's not going to be a huge deal. Like, it's the Illinois State game. You know, this isn't going to be something where, you know, they're sitting out a game like against a rivalry like Iowa State or something like that. So on the field, I don't think that there's going to be any issues. And what's semi-ironic to me is actually at that same press conference, he named Cade McNamara the starting quarterback for the season. So I thought that was a little, maybe a little tongue-in-cheek in there as well. So, but you know, when I look at the situation, you know, tell me exactly that every other coach that wants to win is not doing the same thing. So it's just Iowa has really been at the front of a lot of this off the field stuff for the past year or so. And I'm sure they just want to move on from it. They want to get out in front of it so they can focus on football and winning football.
Yeah, and that's just the thing, and the point I've heard others make, and I agree with, is how many times do you hear of someone entering the transfer portal, whether it's a quarterback, a wide receiver, running back, defensive back, whatever you're talking about, how many times do you hear of them having a no-contact tag, which identifies that, hey, they kind of know where they want to go, right? I'm not saying that there wasn't a line crossed and Kirk Ferentz was very, very contrite, very apologetic. He was very emotional in the press conference. A couple responses to questions, he was clearly fighting back some emotion, fighting back some tears, talking about how this is going to affect the staff and the team and what he told the team and stuff. But it's... there's still plenty of gray area involved with this, but this is something that contacting players happens, right, in this day and age of college football. So I'm not excusing the fact that a line was crossed, and I'm not saying that they're doing the wrong thing by getting out in front of it, because you don't want the NCAA to use you as an example, right? But I just feel like this... it's not nothing, but it's not something either. It's kind of in the middle. And as we continue down this path in college athletics, where there's, you know, the portal and NIL are such prominent things in college sports and especially in college football, I feel like this 2-3 years down the road is just going to be even less of something than it is now. Don't you agree, Ted?
Yeah, I absolutely agree that, you know, there's this House versus NCAA case that is trying to get figured out. And basically what's going to come out of that lawsuit right now and the resolution of that and the settlement of that is we're going to have a complete new structure of college sports. You know, there's going to be revenue sharing. Players are going to be able to earn a salary. There's been figures $20 to $25 million that have floated out there. And you see little bits and pieces of information on Twitter that some schools are maybe saying that, hey, we're going to do this or, hey, we're going to do that as well. Now, that doesn't take away tampering, right? That doesn't take away a situation like this where a coach like Kirk Ferentz may have contacted Cade McNamara before he entered the transfer portal, right? That doesn't take that away. Just like NIL itself is not going away just because that there is a $20 to $25 million type of salary cap as well. So I hope there's some structure. I hope that with this settlement that we can really figure out some guidelines. Everybody's the hot buzzword is guardrails, right? I hope that we can, whatever it is, I think we all want this figured out. It's just, you know, some coaches are using it to their advantage right now. And I've said this before where it's just like, in some respect, if you aren't tampering, you aren't trying, right, to be able to build a really, really good football team. Like I saw an interview today with Miami's Ohio head coach. They were doing a season preview with a radio or an online host, and he says, yeah, you lost your kicker. And Coach Chuck Martin says, no, our kicker was stolen. Our kicker was stolen by Alabama, and Kalen DeBoer was asked about it, had a smirk on his face and didn't really say much. So I just think it's the way of the world now, and I hope that this settlement down the road, we can figure some things out, have a little bit of a clearer picture, because we're obviously way past the era of amateurism. That has come, that has gone, it is done, RIP. So we just need to figure things out so you don't have 80 coaches across the country doing this, but yet still one gets in trouble.
Big Ten Ted here with me on 1600 ESPN. Ted, you mentioned the quarterback situation. I played the clip just before top of the hour here on my show. Kirk, talking about the quarterback situation, said if we're playing tomorrow, which they're not, they're playing a week from Saturday, but if they're playing tomorrow, it's Cade McNamara number one, Brendan Sullivan number two, and Marco Linus number three. What do you make of this quarterback situation? I'll pose the question to you. Who do you think ends up with the most snaps, if you will, at quarterback for Iowa? Is it Cade or is it going to be Brendan Sullivan this year, in your opinion?
Boy, that is a $64,000 question, man. I'll tell you what, that Kids Day scrimmage, obviously it was not televised or anything, but from what we saw and what was reported, it did not look good for Cade McNamara. What, it was something like 7 of 21, fumble snap, threw a pick six, or what would have been a pick six, something like that. So it did not look good. And when you look at Cade McNamara, okay, last year he played a handful of games before a season-ending injury, and he hasn't played a meaningful majority of a football season since he led Michigan to a Big Ten championship all the way back in 2021. So it's been a long time, and he's coming back. Remember, he had an injury during the 2022 season, you know, before he entered the portal and came to Iowa when he was at Michigan. And, of course, now this past year he had a season-ending injury. So that's two injuries to overcome over there. And then you've got a guy in Brendan Sullivan. Okay, when you look at Brendan Sullivan right now, like that Northwestern, he subbed in for Ben Bryant last year, and he played pretty good as well. Especially that Maryland game is one that really stuck out to me for Sullivan. He's got a little bit of scoot in him. I wouldn't say he's ultra mobile or a dual threat or anything like that, but he provides an option that maybe Iowa hasn't had in recent years with the Spencer Petras, with the Deacon Hill, even with Cade McNamara, right, with his lower body injury. So he provides a little bit of mobility. I would say, man, I know Cade McNamara, like Kirk Ferentz, is the guy right now. I would be surprised if he is a starter for all 12 games this year. I think you're going to see things a little bit more convoluted, maybe things a little bit more complicated, I think, this season in Iowa than they maybe are right now. Because not only do you have Sullivan, who raises the floor, by the way, of your quarterback room, coming into this team, now you got Tim Lester, and you got this new scheme, and you got to figure that out as well. Now, remember, Brendan Sullivan was recruited by Tim Lester when Brendan was coming out of high school. So they have a relationship. Tim, at least, that's probably why he was brought in, right? Tim likes, of course, some parts of his game, obviously. So I would say Brendan sees the field at some point. How many games does he start? You know, does he start more than Cade McNamara? Boy, if they make this change middle of the season, that's going to be a disruptive thing. Maybe during the season for the Iowa Hawkeyes to make that quarterback change. But their quarterback play is going to determine a lot. Been hearing a lot of good things about the offensive line and the run game coming out of Iowa camp. So if they can run the football, you have a healthy Luke Lachey most of the season. They're going to improve. But once again, the quarterback, who is going to be able to lead them to more production down the field? My gut maybe tells me Brendan Sullivan, but that's just what my gut tells me right now.
Yeah, you mentioned it, though, and I agree with you. The floor is brought up, and that's what was sorely needed. And Kirk even said it in the clip that I played. He watched some old film from last year at this time, and it was just night and day difference, just based on the skill level and based on the health and based on what they had just in the room. So even if he doesn't see the field, he being Brendan Sullivan, it's good to have a competent backup. I mean, no disrespect to Deacon Hill, but that was not good football. And you need competent quarterback play to be successful in the Big Ten. Ted, I saw on your Twitter, your X account, you tweeted out your predictions for final standings, and you had Iowa at 9-3. Explain your work. Show your work. I'm like your math teacher here. How do they get to three losses?
Oh boy! So here's there's one in there. There's one in there that people might be a little bit confused, might be a little bit floored out of. But I see a lot of predictions out there and people writing it in chalk. Right, this team's better than that team, so they're going to win all those games. We get upset. That's why we love college football. I'll start first. I think early in the season, like we said, they're breaking in this offense, and we saw the struggles that Cade McNamara had early in the season going to Minnesota. I think that's going to be a game very similar to last year, right? Who can make the stop? Who can make the play? Darius Taylor is one of the best running backs in the Big Ten. Minnesota has a really good offensive line. You know, that's just by the slimmest of margins, you know, going on the road to Minnesota. I think Minnesota retains the pig, you know, for two consecutive wins for P.J. Fleck over there as well. And then that Ohio State game, right, against the Buckeyes, that's going to be extremely difficult. Of course, the last time they went to Columbus, it of course didn't pan out too well a few years back as well. And then I got them actually beating Wisconsin, and I think that's going to be somewhat of a emotional game over there. And I think both of those teams are going to be pretty good at that point. The week after Wisconsin, they turn around and go on the road to travel across the country on a Friday night to a UCLA team that's got probably a top five wide receiver room in the country. Ethan Garbers, when he is there, when he's starting, he can be a solid quarterback. T.J. Harden can be a 1,000-yard back. You know, that's an upset spot, right? That's an upset spot. You know, you can maybe switch around these games and maybe they could lose to Wisconsin and beat UCLA or something like that. But I think considering that they're breaking in a new scheme and what we've seen, at least, or what we've heard, what's been reported coming out of camp at the quarterback position, I think there's a fair amount of concern right now for the Iowa Hawkeyes. So that is how my work has been shown. Okay, there's a few upsets that I have in there, and that's one. You know, I think UCLA is a team that a lot of people are kind of pushing down the peg right now, and maybe they just don't know as much about them, but they've got three very good wide receivers. Draft guys think you could have a couple of these go in the top four rounds, something like that. So I think that's going to be a team with Eric Bieniemy coming in as the offensive coordinator. You know, they have a tough three-game slate early in the season. But after that, I think they could turn around. Maybe that's a Friday night game. Weird things happen on some of these night games.
Non-Iowa topic, Ted. We've had some quarterback battles outside of the Hawkeye State being settled recently. Yesterday, Dylan Raiola named the starter at Nebraska. We also saw Tyler Van Dyke get the opening night nod at Wisconsin, and then Will Howard get the nod over at Ohio State. Which of those three do you think has the best year ahead of them in 2024?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. You know, if you were to throw in Miller Moss at USC, who was just named the starting quarterback, I'd probably say him. But out of those three at Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Ohio State, I think you got to go Will Howard, but it's maybe not because of his arm. Will Howard is a great runner. We saw that at Kansas State, and I think he creates a three-headed monster in the backfield with Trevion Henderson and, of course, Quinshon Judkins transferring in as well. But then, you know, everybody talks about the Ohio State run game, Chip Kelly schemes up a great run game, all that stuff. And all of that is true. But I think also something that you need to look at is, oh, I don't know, this is the probably, maybe besides Oregon, the best wide receiver room in the Big Ten Conference. Jeremiah Smith coming in, Emeka Ibuka, you know, Carnell Tate, Brandon Ennis. Like, you've got top receiver after top receiver in some of these recruiting classes. So I think he's going to be better. You know, a lot of time you see quarterbacks, hey, they make their receivers better. But I think it might be the other way around. I think his receivers are going to find a way to get open. It's just going to be up to Will Howard to make the right reads at the right time. When you look at Tyler Van Dyke, man, this is a guy, I think, out of maybe all the quarterbacks in the Big Ten, definitely recently, out of these recently named starters and some of these transfers, the team really relies on how good the quarterback is, maybe more than Wisconsin with Tyler Van Dyke. Because if Tyler Van Dyke maybe played like he did, these last few seasons, where he's a little bit inconsistent, commit some turnovers, this is a team that could go 6-6. They could be that low. But if this is TBD and things are clicking in this Phil Longo offense, this could be a team that could win 8 or 9 games. I firmly believe that. So I think there's a big range with TBD. For Dylan, that's probably the guy that's ask the least right now, right? Hey, we're going to run the football. We're going to take a little bit of pressure off you. We got a great defense. All you got to do is hold on to the football. All you got to do is not be Jeff Sims. He's going to be able to make those throws. Just make those throws when the defense creeps up. You got a one-on-one matchup over the top. Dylan, all you got to do is make that throw, right? You look pretty darn good making those types of throws in the spring game as well. I think they want to see Dylan playing much better down the stretch when you see Ohio State, when you see USC, when you see Wisconsin, when you see Iowa, you know, when you look at some of those teams, specifically Ohio State and USC, you're going to have to score a lot of points to be able to keep up with them and have a shot to win those games. So he's got to be good during that stretch. You know, during the front stretch, when you play Purdue and Illinois and Rutgers, I know they play Colorado out of conference, they're going to need to score in that one. But in terms of conference games, I think you can be fairly physical, run the football, stuff like that, and you don't need to score a bunch of points to be able to win. So by that bye week, by the time they play Ohio State, I think they want to have Dylan ready to go. And this is a Nebraska team. If everything clicks, quarterback holds onto the ball, they could be pretty good as well.
All right, Ted, that's all I got for you this week. We will talk to you again next Thursday, and we will go wall-to-wall week 1 preview content. How about that?
Absolutely. I'm ready to go already.
There you go. Big Ten Ted, appreciate it. Always a pleasure having him on the program and kind enough to take some time to join me here. A little pre-week 1 discussion here on 1600 ESPN.